I'm going to step in while Joe and family are in South Carolina at, might be a nephew's graduation, I think, from Paris Island, or it's something like that, graduation from boot camp or something. And weren't any other really relatives in the area, so it was convenient for Joe. He's a close enough distance to be able to run down there and be a family member there. And I understand this weekend we'll meet Joe's dad, stepmom. They'll be here this weekend, so excited about meeting them. But in the interim, I chose to stay with Ecclesiastes and to power through some review questions. And so thank you for being here, and I hope some more folks come in, because I want you guys to look up the answers to these questions and to raise your hand and respond. And I did not have a chance to email everybody these questions ahead of time, but they're not difficult. They're easy to look up. I used help from Mark Copeland on this. I just reviewed the book a lot myself and then used some of his questions. So we're in the book of Ecclesiastes, as we have been, and we're reviewing what we've done so far, which is 1 through 11, because we still have chapter 12, and then we're done with that book, from what I understand. We're moving on to another study after that. And I'd like to begin with a word of prayer, and maybe Dave Messer, would you lead us in prayer at this time? Thank you.
Our Father and our Holy God in heaven, we thank thee for allowing us to be here tonight to study your word. We pray that we study Ecclesiastes and we'll be able to learn many things and be in your service. We pray that you forgive us for sins and help us to live in your will. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. So I've benefited a lot from this lesson. I know most of us have. And so really, tonight's just kind of re-expose ourselves to this. Joe, I don't think, had any plan to do anything like this. So he said that would be fine with him. So let's get started. And every one of the chapters is going to ask that same question at the beginning. And that's one of the more difficult ones to just lay your hands on. I don't know if there's a perfect answer to that necessarily. But does anybody want to take a stab at that? Ecclesiastes chapter 1, just what's the thrust of that first, maybe two or three things you got out of Ecclesiastes chapter 1 specifically, as the Koheleth, the preacher, introduces these new ideas? Anybody?
All is vanity.
Yes. Now you're getting a little bit ahead, because that may be the answer to number 3, as stated in verse 2, but yes, vanity or futility of what? What would you say? Futility of what?
Everything.
Everything, yes.
All.
And he's going to get into many, we're going to get the answer to this question as we go through these other questions. But anybody else? Anybody? Any other overall themes you'd say in this one chapter? Pardon? Yes. Same thing, futility. You know, he expressing his frustration and kind of a pessimistic attitude as he opens the book, which is interesting way to open this. And of course, it's not going to be pessimistic as we move along. We understand in a poetic way how he's leading our thinking. But so, how does the author of this book describe himself? Verse 1. The preacher. And what else? What preacher specifically in verse 1 does he say he is? Yahweh.
Son of David.
Son of David. And, you know, there is some dispute about whether he is the actual author or whether it was several other wise men came together to write this book. These scholars think, but it's pretty clear that it was indeed Solomon. You want to answer this one? Okay, Gary, you already did, right? Number 3. in verse 2, he says, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What is the key question that this book seeks to address from verse 3? Somebody
read it. What advantage is there to all of man's work?
Yeah.
He does, but which I would translate as, what's the purpose of his life?
Yeah. Yeah, what profit is there? What is the profit to man from all the stuff he goes through, all the labor in his life, everything he does under the sun? Of course, that's a perspective, and we know that he has to look above the sun to get the benefit from this life. A few more on chapter 1 here. What illustrations are given? And there's several here. Verses 4 through 7 to show the futility of life.
One generation comes, it passes away.
Yes. Yeah, we see generations, people are born, they live, they die.
Life still goes on.
Life goes on. Now it's 4 through 7. So what are the other illustrations in verse 5?
The sun rises and the sun sets.
The sun.
Days pass.
Yes.
I think it's the whole point of that.
The cycle, yeah.
Days pass and it's still everything's the same.
Yeah. Yeah. What else? With the sun, the generations, the sun, what else? What's the next one?
The wind.
The wind. What's the last one?
Water cycle.
The water cycle. Like, whoa! You know, this just goes on. And what is never satisfied? Verse 8.
Eyes and ears.
We see a beautiful sunset. Does that mean we're never going to want to see another sunset? No, we want to see another one.
That's actually the problem, that you never see. You always want to see something better.
Yeah.
If you see a beautiful sunset, it's, okay, well, maybe I'll see a better one tomorrow night. Maybe something will be better.
Yeah. Yeah, or the ear with hearing. Yeah, I've listened to that song one time, so I don't ever want to listen to that music. And of course, we want to hear it. Play it again, right?
Not necessarily. Some of you want to hear once.
That's right. I'm sure there's some music in your CDs at your house, your iPod. Let's roll on here. Let's see. I'm sorry, number 7. Why is there nothing new under the sun? Verse 9. Excuse me, number... Yeah, from verse 9. Put this into your own words if you want. Well, what's Solomon saying here?
The nature of man just continues to repeat itself.
Yes.
That's not saying we didn't have iPhones back 2,000 years ago. We have new technologies, but man itself, life in the sun, man's perspective on things continues just like it is. We all see the same thing. Try to find the pleasure out of all the things he's going to see. And in the end, there's no pleasure. It's all vanity.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be fun to time travel, but if we put ourselves back in whatever century, whatever time, by some of the same dynamics among people would be the exact same in any culture. And yes?
And looking at it as the flesh and desires mainly. Temporarily satiated. Most of us last started little didn't want to look at food.
Didn't want to
come frying and look for something.
Yep.
It's turning pages. But it's the same thing. There's nothing new under the sun. It may be new to me, but it's always been. The potential has always been there, the concepts, the programming, the It'll be new to me, but it's not new.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seemed like somebody might have said this in one of the classes, and I thought it was interesting. But sin hasn't changed. It's still the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. No matter what technology we have, no matter what advancements we have, you know, it's the same things that tempt us to sin and draw us, you know, away from God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. Nothing's changed, including the curse of sin on all mankind. That's a great point. Number 8, why do we think, from verses 10 and 11, why do we think something is new?
Short memories.
Yes. I mean, the phrase we always hear is history repeats itself, right? And we forget that. Solomon's saying no. Already as it has existed for ages which were before us, verse 10, the latter part says, there's no remembrance of earlier things and also the later things which will occur. There will be for them no remembrance among those who come later still. So we think it's new. It's new to us, I guess. And the overall theme on this is Solomon is saying, if that's where you're focusing on, you're mistaken to go down that road in life to pursue these things. Of course, again, he's setting us up, so to speak, for these further thoughts. Last questions on this chapter. What did the preacher determine to do in verse 13, and why? Said he had a lot of time on his hands, evidently. A man of peace after 40 years of warfare with his father. He had a lot of time on his hands and a lot of wisdom, as we know God gave him. So what does he say he's planning to do? Say it. Speak up.
To study and explore.
Yes.
Find out.
Yeah. And it's important that he says this because he's going to do it to an extent beyond anything any of us have got a chance to do. So his point is going to be, I've been there and I've done it. I've been there and I've done it. And you can follow it if you want, but you're not going to get any further deeper into it than I am. Number 10, having seen the works done under the sun, what did he conclude in verses 14 and 15? All is
vanity
and what else he adds to it?
Grasping for the wind.
Grasping for the wind. That's pretty tough. What is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be continued. What did he acknowledge? Yes, question.
I've always loved that expression, grasping for the wind. If you're trying to attain, no matter how hard you try or how much effort you put into it, you will never attain it. It's not there to attain. And I think that's the point he's making throughout the entire book, is that as hard as we try to find satisfaction in this life, it's futile. It's unattainable without God.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's so thorough, his explanation. Yes?
And when you grasp the wind, it's no longer wind. It's not moving anymore, so it's not wind. So what makes it what you were trying for, it's not what you were thinking it was.
That's true. Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. I'm glad there's somebody wiser than I here, so you can extrapolate on this. Well, scientist, we got a scientist, so. Number 11, what did he acknowledge he had attained? Verse 16. We know this from his what he had been blessed with, right?
Wisdom.
Yeah, he's affirming what I was saying a little earlier. I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. And verse 17. what did he say is hard to know. And I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I realized that this also is striving after wind. So it's kind of opening these thoughts and this is the conclusion he drew, basically. Let's go to chapter 2. Main points of chapter 2. As you review this chapter and look over it, what specific things does he introduce in this chapter? It's kind of one of the more rememberable chapters of Ecclesiastes, I think. Pleasures, yes. Pardon? Yes. He's going to search for meaning by exploring all these different areas. That's really the first 10 verses. Then he kind of reflects upon his search. And again, the meaninglessness of it and his conclusion from his search of the latter part of this chapter. What sort of things did he explore, verses 1 through 3? Kind of the same things people explore today, right?
Laughter. Wine, folly.
Wine, yeah. Does that sound any different than today? Yeah. Mirth. What guided his heart during the course of this search? Verse 3. Wisdom, yeah. And then, that's evidently what's given to him by God, the wisdom given to him by God. What things did he accumulate during his search? This is a long list of these things, but verses 4 through 8. Yes?
I wonder if the guide in his heart with wisdom there is suggesting the idea that he tried these things, but he did not go to a dangerous excess, an addictive excess. Losing self-control, losing a spiritual nature or a godlike nature in the process, within the bounds of what God expects us to do. Don't know, but I think the wisdom that would suggest not just knowing how to do it, but when to not do it or when to curtail and limit.
Yeah, I read a comparison with him and his father David. David's sin with Bathsheba. I mean, of course, he married. Had how many wives? But I think David's sin was specifically more grievous, and allowing Uriah to be put to death and such. They were comparing that Solomon never did anything that treacherous in his life. So maybe there's something to be said for that he experimented with these things, but didn't. He was able to reflect upon them later and write this with God's inspiration, this book. So back to the list, though. What were some of the things right off the top of your head you can remember that he did? Of course, the wives, I just mentioned that. That's one of the things he did. What else? I kind of think of the Biltmore House, you know.
Houses and vineyards.
Houses and, vineyards, fountains or
orchards. Water pools.
Yeah. Fruit trees to water them.
Servants,
yeah.
Livestock.
We can't even imagine the extent of this, you know. The servants would mean just... He, in that respect, he probably had nothing that he ever did because he wanted to explore that to see if there was something to that. Yes, livestock, herds, and flocks. Go back to music again. He had male and female singers and musical instruments of all kinds. And it's mentioned about money, too. He wanted to see if accumulation of money would be satisfactory. And you know, we know that... his kingdom was over the top. You know, it said that the gold and silver were like, you know, stones on the ground, and they were so common. So, number five, how great did he become? Verse 9 tells us. Relatively speaking. Anyone before him? There's something to be said for that, and he's saying that for our benefit, not to toot his own horn, but for our benefit to understand that there's no sense in going down these roads. Number six, what did he get from verse 10?
Whatever he wanted.
Anything his eyes laid on, I did not refuse. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. Number seven up here, what was his reaction to this great accumulation of wealth? Verses 10 and 11. Same thing. Yeah. Same result.
You know, sometimes it's only when you have an excess of something that you realize that it's not that great. I remember when I was a kid, I loved malted milk balls. When I was like 9 or 10. And my buddy and I saved up a bunch of money. We bought a whole carton of malted milk balls. And we ate about half of them and got sick. And I've never really liked malted milk balls since. But the point is when, you know, you think you want something. And then when you have an abundance of it, it's like, well, this isn't as good as I imagined it would be. And I think, you know, we can't attain certain things, so those are always just out of our grasp. And think, well, you know, but Solomon had everything.
Yeah.
And he realized it was just not as great as he thought it would be.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a few other malted milk balls in this room right here. Same. And really, that's a great point because it brings this to application to us. Because this isn't about trying to attain super wealth. It's about setting foot down a path, thinking those kinds of things, that you're going to get satisfaction out of an accumulation of something. That's a great point. I like Mallow cups. I don't think they even make those anymore. That was my candy. Threw me off here thinking about chocolate now. That's a lot of people's love. Number eight, what conclusions were drawn about the value of wisdom and folly? Verses 12 through 16. I'll take this one. It says, and I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. Wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I know that one fate befalls them both. Meaning death, I'm sure. Then I said to myself, as is the fate of a fool, it will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this too is vanity. For there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as in the coming days all will be forgotten, and how the wise man and the fool alike die. And verse 17, what did this reflection lead him to do? Someone answer that. They hated life. He hated life because it was grievous to me, which is how many people, you know, lottery tickets or whatever, you know, and they really think that that's going to, life will be good after that, after when I get this or this house or this car or, you know. And he had more than anybody ever. And it was grievous to him to go through this task of trying to probe into these excesses. Let's see, where am I at? What else caused him to hate his labor? What's his other point here? What's another reason that he hated it?
Because
he'll leave it to somebody else. Yeah. Yeah, why become imbalanced in a search for accumulating stuff? And you're putting aside more important things in order to work and accumulate, and you're not even going to get to the benefit of it. Why did this trouble him? Verses 19 through 21. Yeah. Didn't know who to be left to. Why did he conclude? What did he conclude was the result of one's labor, striving, and toil for things under the sun? Verses 22 and 23. Yeah. Yeah. Verse 23. All his days, his task is painful and grievous. So New American Standard says, even at night, his mind doesn't rest. It's vanity. It's vanity. And we see that even, I'll let you comment instead of me here, but
don't you think that maybe Solomon, after he had done everything that he wanted to do, accumulated all the stuff that he accumulated, and he got to this point, he's absolutely, totally bored. There's nothing left to do. Really. He's got it all. He's built it. He's done it. He's planted it.
Well, he communicates that through this, and whether in his wisdom he's able to write this body, this book.
He comes up and just says, I'm bored, and there's nothing to do.
Yeah.
That's what life is.
And if you pursue these things without God, you'll have the same result. You'll have even if it's just magnificent and from a worldly perspective, you'll get the same result. So that's great. Great point. Where are we at here? What did he say was the best man could achieve? Verse 24. This is where he changes his perspective a little bit, and there's a glimmer of positiveness. And two or three other places in the book, he has these interludes. What's the best thing for man to do?
Enjoy.
Yeah.
Today's version of that stops my movements.
Yeah.
You can work on your garden all you want to, but if you don't stop and enjoy it, what's the good thing?
Yeah. So instead of vanity and chasing after wind, this is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? And verse 26, what did the sinner receive? Or what did the sinner receive and for what purpose? Or what has he been given, more accurately?
The task of gathering and collecting so he may give it to someone who is good at God's sake.
Yeah. Is that true? Do we see that today? And yeah. Are examples of that? Sometimes. Yeah. So chapter 3, let's go on to that one. One of the main points of this course, this is of course the bird song. That's how I always think of this growing up at the time when that was a popular song. I guess this chapter became popular because of that. Does anybody not know about that song? I hate to say that, it shows my age. But anything else? What, main points of this chapter. What is the gist of this? A time to, you know, tear down. A time to build up. What is the gist of that section of the book, or chapter? Excuse me.
There's a time for everything.
Pardon?
There's a time for everything.
Yes, and beyond that, how much control do we have over some of these events? That's what I was getting at a little bit. None. It's inexplicable, some of this, you know, how we're, there are going to be things that will happen in life, whether we like it or not, they're going to press on, they're going to go on. And the latter part of this book gets into the injustices and difficulty understanding how some things don't play out the way that we think they should. Life isn't what we tell our kids. That's fair. Life isn't fair. Verse 1, what does the preacher say about everything under heaven? Yeah, there's a time. There is a time.
And there's a purpose.
And we have all these examples. I'm not going to read through all of them, but the preacher gives us many, many examples. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to weep, a time to laugh. Yes?
Talking about the time and progress that he tried to make and measure and see the effects. History shows us that what we perceive as progress has, in just about every case, collapsed, regressed, and then it's over. The only thing that truly progresses is time. It's continually moving forward. And I think that's what he's saying here is everything is going to happen when it's supposed to. God has control over it. And we can call progress, we can call regress, we can call whatever, but God determines when it's going on and where it's going. And we're on the right.
Yeah. Because mankind will be at a pinnacle point of the great civilizations. Egyptian, Greek, Roman, you know. They were there. That's what I started thinking when you said that. But they're not in control of these same things. Are going to be in place and affect those things. The one I have difficulty with is a time to keep silence and a time to speak. That's how I always get those mixed up. Number 4, what question does the preacher restate in verse 9? Yeah. What profit is there to the worker in his toiling? And what profit is it? What 4 things has he seen in verses 10 and 11? Important. One of these is an important point, I think. What does he put in man's heart? That's one of the 4 things. He's put eternity in man's heart. Yet, what does it say? He's put eternity in our heart. So he's put into our heart an understanding of that this isn't all there is. But yet, no one can find out the work God's done from beginning to end. And we've talked about all these things already, so I'm not going to go into great detail, but it's just really designed as a review and remember where these things are in these books as we continue to study or search for these things. Number 6, what does the preacher conclude is best for people to do? Verses 12 and 13. We saw this a moment ago in chapter 2, verse 24, right? Yep. That it's the gift of God, and rejoice and do good in their lives. So positive contrasted with the toil, the vanity. Why has God made what he does unchangeable?
Rather than do for me, do good for everyone and everything around, rather than do it for me. That's one of the things they learned.
Yeah.
Am I mistaken? Is that the first time in education is that something done with favor toward other people?
Well, that gist of our labor is going to be in service to others and not.
At this point in time, the labor was for me.
Yes.
I'm building, I'm doing, I'm collecting, I'm gaining, I'm doing, and here you say do good.
Yeah.
In other words, give, don't give.
Yeah. You have to think that eating and drinking and seeing good in all his labor is with family and friends and others. And your labor is in thinking of in Ephesians, is it Ephesians 3 or 4? That's our purpose.
At this point in time, we don't hear about others, other consideration of others.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. Why has God made what he does unchangeable? Verse 14, back to that thought. What's the beginning of wisdom? That man do what? Fear God. God has so worked that men should fear him. Again, NAS says that. What will God require from verse 15? See that correctly. Really, I think that's not a great question, but it's really an accounting of what's already happened. Essentially, how about number 9? As the preacher looked in places where there should have been judgment and righteousness, what did he see? That men are like what? Yeah. Yep. Wickedness, iniquity. What did he reason in his heart about this? From verse 17. God will judge him. Yes. And there'll be a time, there'll be a purpose for every person. What did he tell himself was the reason that God allowed such things? Number 11 here, from verse 18. Yeah, I got ahead of myself. This is his point about beasts. That God would test men, and that they may see that they're like beasts. And his next point, what does man have in common with beasts? They both do what? They both die. They both die, and they both return to the dust. Verse 21, though, what is the difference between man and beast? Which way does the spirit of man go? Yeah. Spirit of the beast goes down to the earth.
I think you may be saying, how do you know that one goes up and one goes down
from an under the sun perspective? Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
There's a question mark in the New American Standard.
Yeah. Number 40, what did the preacher perceive was best for man to do? Yeah, rejoice in his labors. It's almost a, so fresh to see that, and there's not an emphasis on that. The emphasis is on so many of the negative things. We'll go through a couple more. Oh, no, we won't, actually. That's all that I had put up on here on the, up on here, so.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, Ray, and back in verse 16, it says, in the place of justice, there is wickedness. In the place of righteousness, there is wickedness. And I think, you know, that's those, the judicial system and the religious system, when you think about it, if it's the place of righteousness, that's where the priest should be, the righteous. And the place of justice is those who judge. And he's saying in the beginning, things haven't changed. There's nothing new under the sun, and that's still the case. You still see the same sort of thing. There's corruption, in the place of justice.
Mm-hmm.
There's corruption in the place of, righteousness.
So mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's amazing. We didn't get very far in this, and I mean, I hope that this is. Joe's talking about maybe going on and doing a further study on Solomon after this, before we wrap up all this wisdom, study on wisdom. And we didn't, Proverbs and the benefit of this is great. But are there any other thoughts? What has been the benefit for all of us of doing this study so far? Is there any personal benefit of researching these same topics again for any of us here? Yeah.
If you're stuck under the sun, you can't see past the sun.
Yeah.
And that's where the cross is.
Yeah.
And that's this last verse, 22, so that proceeds nothing better than a man should rejoice in his own work, for that is his heritage.
Yeah.
What you leave on this earth for the next generation is the only thing that you have going for you. That's kind of sad because it finishes off. For who can bring it? To see what will happen after. Once you're gone, you have no clue what the effects of what you did.
Yeah.
So what good is it?
Yeah. Yeah. The our local author here is quoted in this little book that we have, the Wilson Adams book, and it's Thomas Wolfe, and he makes a comment about this being, in his mind, the finest piece of literature that's ever been written, because it pulls together all these thoughts. And I don't know that he was a very religious-minded man. I would say probably not, based on his writings. But he knew, moral struggles. Yes?
He couldn't go home again because he'd written about all of his neighbors in the book.
Yeah.
Named by all the streets, something that, but he didn't go home again.
So that's why he named that next book that, right? I can't go home again. I've tried to read some of his stuff, but man, is it it's so wordy. Oh, it's beautiful, if you read a little bit of it, but anyways. Thank you. Thanks for your participation.